emotions and laughter, anger, and let's if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush will speak to Congress and the nation this evening from the Capitol. Tonight's State of the Union speech will be his next-to-last address while in office and the first facing a new Democratic Congress. Mr. Bush is expected to focus on domestic issues in the speech, which begins at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. He'll present ideas on how to reduce America's dependence on foreign oil, as well as how to make health care more available and affordable. He wants America to cut gasoline consumption by 20% by the year 2017. The Army General, who is nominated to be the senior commander in Iraq, appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee today for the start of his confirmation hearings. Lieutenant General David Petraeus described the situation in Iraq as, quote, dire, and said there would be, quote, tough days ahead. A private U.S. security company helicopter owned by Blackwater USA shot down today over a mostly Sunni neighborhood in central Baghdad. The five civilians aboard died, according to a U.S. military official. As a second U.S. aircraft carrier group heads to the Persian Gulf, the U.S. Under Secretary of State for Political Affairs issued a warning to Iran to back down in its attempts to control the region. The top U.S. diplomat ruled out direct negotiations between Washington and Tehran and repeated that Iran must halt its nuclear enrichment program. In Moscow, authorities say they've completed their billion-dollar arms deal with Iran. The missile sale has been criticized by Washington and Israel. Although there are sanctions against Iran as a result of its uranium enrichment program, the sale of conventional weaponry is permitted. In Beirut, thousands of Hezbollah supporters brought the city to a halt today as they blocked the streets and highways leading into the capital. There were some clashes reported between Sunni and Christian factions against Hezbollah supporters. Police say three people were killed and 43 others shot in those confrontations. Oscar nominations were announced this morning. Dreamgirls earned 8, the most nominations, but was shut out of the Best Picture category. Films nominated for Best Picture are Golden Globe winner Babel, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead. Now this message.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A United Nations draft report indicates that over the past half century, human activities are very likely the main cause of global warming. 600 scientists came up with a conclusion. The FDA may set a higher standard for contraceptives, which now must be met before they can go on the market. The government says the newer birth control pills seem to be less effective in preventing pregnancy. Last month, the index of leading economic indicators went up 0.3 percentage point. That's according to the Conference Board. The Conference Board also reports that U.S. labor productivity grew only 1.4% last year. That's the least amount in more than a decade. U.S. output fell behind both the European Union and Japan. That suggests the Federal Reserve may not be able to cut interest rates. London Stock Exchange has until Friday to accept or reject a takeover bid by NASDAQ. NASDAQ is dominated by U.S. tech listings, offering $5.5 billion, which the LSE says is currently insufficient. Chief executive of the Gap, Paul Pressler, out of a job now as the troubled retailer struggles with declining sales. He'll receive a $14 million severance package. Currently, light sweet crude oil trading at $55.04 a barrel. That's up $2.46 at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow up 56 points at 12,533. NASDAQ flat. The S&P 500 up 5. And there's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy. Okay, I guess you can figure it out. I'm not Bob, but I'm the next best thing. Tonight we're going to have a special head-on in honor of State of the Union. Considering that our dear leader is going to be on here very shortly and telling us everything that we need to do for our country, we figured that you would like to hear some people who really have America's best interest at heart. These are interviews that Head-On has done over the past year with Congressman Kucinich, Ray Hall, and even Pastor Dan. These people are the ones who have stood for our beliefs, for our value system. Sometimes they're the most overlooked people in America. When you want a brighter future, you have to work for it. You have to demand it. And right now, we're not getting what we demanded. Our health care system's in a shambles. Child care is almost non-existent. And we are the left-behind nation. We're more involved with countries across the oceans than we are with our own. And we're sticking our heads in the sand. Tonight, when you listen to Bush, see how many times he talks about a stronger nation. By now, we should be the strongest nation in the world if it was left up to him, right? Instead, we're broken. If we don't stand up for our rights, no one else will. Our children and our children's children depend on you solely. The people that have control of this country right now, your vote counts. No matter what they say about the voting system, you know how you vote. Stand up for it. Demand what belongs to you. Social Security, you worked for it. You own it. Don't let someone take it away from you. Now, you've heard enough of me. We're going to go on to these wonderful men who stand up for your rights. And in 2008, please remember these men once again. Don't let them fall through the cracks. Because what's been done to us now is a travesty. This is not the America that we've been brought up in. This is not what we stand for. And if you want something better, then you better speak out and you better work for it. Because right now, all I can see is a circular firing squad. Everybody wants to fight amongst themselves and talk about what's right. It's the important issues, your environment, your livelihoods is what counts. Everything else will fall into place. But you need to stand up for what you believe in now, or there's not going to be anything to stand for. So without further ado, let me cue up Congressman Kucinich here and enjoy.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And on the phone with us right now, a particular and signal honor for me. We are joined by presidential candidate and Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Kucinich, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time to join us. I think my producer was so excited, Congressman, that she forgot to turn you up there. Can you hear me now?
Yes, and I can hear you loud and clear, and I'm hopeful the American people are going to hear my voice loud and clear in this campaign, because I want to bring our troops home and give America a new direction in the world.
Well, Congressman, I think it's that's the single most important message that this nation needs to hear. And one of the things I pointed out is it cannot be said in this presidential cycle that the anti-war, the end of the war message is somehow out of the mainstream. You, having joined this presidential campaign, Congressman, are actually, as far as I'm concerned, you're the majority candidate right now, because 72% of America agrees with you.
Well, I believe that. I know I'm the majority candidate, because the majority of people in this country voted to give the Democrats power, expect us to take the troops out of Iraq, and it was quite shocking to a lot of Americans to learn that the leaders of the Democratic Party are now saying they're going to, their intention is to fund the war, and a supplemental appropriation of $160 billion in the spring to keep the war going to the end of Bush's term. Now, what that means is that we're ignoring the fact that there's money in the pipeline right now, Bob. Congress appropriated $70 billion October 1st, just 2 months ago. That money can be used to bring the troops home. The American people want the troops home. The American people want an end to this war. Well, let's show that it can be done, and that's why I'm running, to give the people a voice and a choice.
Well, Congressman, what do you say to those people who say, well, you know, it's just unrealistic, we can't just pull out now?
Actually, we have to. It is realistic. The war, it cannot be won militarily. It's already been stated by the Iraq Study Group and by a number of generals. We're in a moment right now where the war is, the violence in the war is cycling upward. If you read the daily headlines, and, you know, we would spend the entire interview period here reciting the cities where there have been massive casualties in Iraq, and our presence there is a destabilizing factor. Our presence has fueled the insurgency. Our presence has created for Al-Qaeda an opening in Iraq. Our presence needs to end. We need to end the occupation, bring the troops home, secure Iraq by working with countries around the region who ordinarily we wouldn't want to work with. But we have to change that thinking, too. We have to reach out to Syria and Iran. We need a solution that provides stability for Iraq, but we cannot do it as occupiers.
The American people, it's taken them a while to get around to this notion that we've got to get out, but we're there now, Congressman. Why do you think, based, you know, after what we saw, this profound sea change in the congressional makeup of November 7th, what's happened all of a sudden? What happened to that momentum to end this?
Well, I think you're looking at the dynamic which is going to also affect 2008. The people decided they wanted a change, so they swept the Democrats into power in November. The Democrats get the power, and all of a sudden our leaders say, whoa, wait a minute. You know, we're going to keep funding the war. They use the euphemism of we have to support the troops in the field. Fact of the matter is that the longer we fund the war, the longer the troops are there. I mean, what our leaders are talking about is not voting to support the troops in the field. They're voting to keep the troops in the field. And so my position is to say, look at the mandate the people gave us. Let's be encouraged by the power of the American people expressing their government to go in a new direction. Let's take that power and express the will of the people and claim the co-equality of the Congress and let the president know there's a new direction coming and tell the president we have the money to bring the troops home now and tell the president we're not going to give him any more money to keep the war going and keep the troops there. That's what we ought to be doing. That's why I'm running. That's why I want to let the American people know, look, we can go in a new direction now. We don't have to be stuck. And, you know, the only, you know, we're in a rut in Iraq, and the only difference between a rut and a grave is in the dimensions.
Isn't that the absolute truth? What kind of costs, if you know, what kind of costs are associated with bringing them home?
Well, you know, we already have ships that are in the area to bring them home. We have planes to bring them home. You know, what is it if we put the troops on a first class on planes and give them a first class air ticket? It would not be that expensive. You have 140,000 troops. I mean, let's say at most it would cost $1 billion to bring them home. You leave the equipment there for the Iraqi army. The point is that that's not an impediment. We have the money to bring them home. Nobody is arguing. The money is not there to bring them home. What isn't there at this point to bring them home? Our party leaders don't have the will to bring the troops home, yet the American people have the will to bring the troops home. So I say if the people have the will to bring the troops home, then the Congress ought to have that will. And if the Congress doesn't have that will, and other presidential candidates don't have that will, the people need to know that there's one person who's been consistent. You know, people are looking for leadership. Leadership has to show foresight. I saw it was wrong to go in. It is wrong to stay in. We need to get out now. And I've showed the way to do it. I have a plan that it makes it possible to restore the Iraqi people over a period of time, but we can't do it as occupiers. So now's the time to act. And anyone who wants more information, can just go to my website at Kucinich.us and read my analysis of the only way to get out of Iraq and can read the votes that so many members of Congress, including a number of people who are talking about running for president, gave to fund the war. Final comment here, you cannot vote to fund the war and say you're opposed to the war.
Well, that seems to be common sense to me. Now that the people have spoken, Congressman, I suppose one could accuse me of being a little bit mean or perhaps cynical. It seems that now that the public opinion is so thoroughly swung toward the idea of finally recognizing how profoundly wrong this war is and was. I mean, the polling data now says that the people say that Americans recognize it was wrong to do it in the first place. It would seem to me that we have to, and perhaps not you, more like me, we have to have a debate about how much blood we are willing to have on our hands now that we realize it is a wrong thing.
Well, you're right about that. John Kerry raised the question when he was a young person opposing the war in Vietnam. He says, you know, how are you going to tell someone that a family, they're going to be the last, their loved one's going to be the last person to die in a war that was wrong? I mean, I'm paraphrasing it, but the fact remains that we were wrong to go in. Now, the one thing that you probably know, Bob, is that I organized the effort against the war in the House of Representatives. In 2002, I organized 125 Democrats to vote against the war. When I stepped forward and I said, look, there's no proof that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11, you know, some people were saying, well, you're not a good American. I said, wait a minute, you know, where's the proof? There's no proof Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. I gave a speech called Prayer for America. It's on my website at Kucinich.us. I gave it in California in 2002, and I predicted everything that would happen unless the government came to its senses. I was right then, I'm right now. People want someone who has foresight. You know, the prophet Isaiah said, without vision, a people perish. And I was able to see through the lies. And I think people want leadership like that. People want leadership which has the courage to challenge prevailing consensus and to shake the sensibilities of the Congress and say, look, we're going the wrong direction. The people gave us the power to bring these troops home now. Let's do it.
Well, obviously, you have an ability through your candidacy to speak to the American people. What about your day-to-day work inside the Congress, in terms of committee work or speaking with your colleagues? What about a member of the House such as Jack Murtha, who started out very much a hawk and now realizes it has to end? Can there be reaching across the ideological, if not political, aisle?
Of course, there can be, and we need to do that, and I intend to do that. I met with Jack Murtha last week to talk to him about the necessity of voting of bringing our troops home now, the money being there right now. Jack Murtha performed a public service by having thoroughly supported the war, recognized the wrongness of it, took that position. He was one of the ones responsible for the change in the Congress. What thanks did he get? He ran for majority leader, and he was defeated by a wide margin. Jack Murtha had the willingness to take a stand. The next step is to tell the president, look, we're not going to keep funding the war. You know, this $70 billion that's already been funded, mm-hmm. They can bring the troops home. The money's there right now. Add to that the $160 billion, up to $160 billion, which many of the leaders have already said they will give the president in the spring. That's $230 billion.
Almost a quarter of a trillion.
Almost a quarter of a trillion dollars. And that's twice the amount that was appropriated for the war in the year 2006, which when the war was escalated. The $160 billion is three times the amount of our federal education budget. Think about our priorities. Think about the needs of the people across this country for job creation, for health care, for housing, for education. And we're throwing all of the resource of our country into this war. What is going on in America? Why don't we take the mandate the people gave us and bring our troops home and start to chart a new direction? This is a serious moment in American history. I'm running for president because I believe the people need to know that someone's willing to stand up and speak out, that somebody had the foresight from the beginning to say it was wrong to go in, it's wrong to stay in, that somebody's willing to challenge his own party and say, look, we have the power now. Let's bring the troops home. And so I'm working on rallying the American people. And anyone who wants to join me, I invite you to go to my website at Kucinich.us and read the article about, the way to get out of Iraq and sign up for newsletters so you can see what I'm continuing to do. I'm going to be traveling across this country to give people an opportunity to hear the truth. And I think the American people will respond again, just as they responded in November. The support is there, as you said at the beginning of the program, Bob. The American people already spoke on this, and I feel I'm representing the mainstream of this country with the position I'm taking.
Well, Congressman, obviously presidential campaigns do not come cheap. Do you also have fundraising information at the website?
We're going to be raising money on the Internet. Last campaign, I raised about $13 million, much of it on the Internet. And people, this is a populist campaign. People have a chance to support someone who's not owned by defense contractors. I mean, Dwight David Eisenhower said, more than 50 years ago when he was on his way out as president of the United States, he said, beware of the military-industrial complex. And he understood that a war can after a while, be its own justification. People making billions of dollars. Well, there's so much suffering going on both sides. So this is another dimension here. And people can go to my website and if they can help financially, it'll help accelerate our message, and it'll help us grow this campaign and unite the American people and change the outcome and put our country in a new direction.
Well, you showed profound vision in 2004, and it seems that vision has certainly stayed with you. Part of that vision was the opposition to the war, but Congressman, another part of that was your early advocacy of health care reform in this country and education reform. We've talked a number of times on this program about the $9 billion in cash that just sort of fell into the sofa at the Coalition Provisional Authority, and Paul Bremer said, I have no idea what happened to it. When we talk about numbers like $9 billion and expanding on that vision that you have, what would $9 billion do, for instance, for the Medicaid Part D donut hole? Or what would $9 billion do toward making sure that people who work three jobs a day or the husband and wife work four jobs together just to keep food on the table and a roof over the family? What would $9 billion, never mind the quarter of a trillion, what would $9 billion do for the things that Americans really need done?
Every appropriation of that magnitude has the chance to change the life of millions of people. We do have serious educational needs. I mean, I have advocated universal daycare where children ages 3, 4, and 5 would be able to enjoy year-round educational opportunities, an early start in life, while their parents, who are often paying as much for daycare as they pay for a child to go to college, but you have the opportunity to support the family and not worry about whether their children are cared for, and make sure their children are getting an opportunity for an early start.
And that puts people to work too in those daycare
Absolutely.
Centers.
I mean, I've advocated a universal, single-payer, not-for-profit health care system. Myself and John Conyers sponsored a bill in the last Congress that's supported by over 70 members of Congress, and the idea is to turn health care from a for-profit industry to a non-profit service to the people. There are over 100 million Americans who are either uninsured or underinsured, and you know, right now America spends about more than $2 trillion a year on health care, but one out of every $4 goes for the activities of the for-profit system, for corporate profits, for executive salaries, for advertising, marketing.
Bonuses.
And when you take that money and put it instead into health care, you suddenly have enough money for all health care services for all the people, for daily medical care, for vision care, for prescription drugs, for all of the kinds of health care needs, even long-term care that the American people have. I mean, think about it. This is what we ought to be talking about in America. We should be talking about how we can meet the needs of our people and domestically. And instead, what we're doing is we're pouring the blood and treasure of this nation into Iraq in a war that not only cannot be won militarily, but never should have been fought in the first place.
It boggles my mind. And the health care debate is very significant to me, Congressman, because this is a startup business we're running here. We're very proud to be the absolute liberal voice, radio voice of America. And, you know, we're producing in excess of 12 hours of liberal conversation per day. We think it's a dialogue that America is hungry for. But I'll tell you the honest truth. If I get sick, I'm done. I have no health care. And you know what? I don't feel like it's necessarily a matter of I deserve it, but I and many other Americans out there are trying to do something to help America. We're trying to contribute to the economy. We're trying to keep America going. And an America that says it's more important to kill what is it now? Three quarters of a million Iraqi civilians dead as a result of this war. That's more important than seeing to people who go to work every day and can't go to the doctor when they're sick. There is something we're approaching things, Congressman, that go beyond fiscal concerns
and policy concerns and philosophical concerns. This is a realm that moves into the profoundly moral, is it not?
Well, it is a question of morality. I mean, what kind of morality is it to destroy the health of the Iraqi people when we're not using the resources to build a health of our own? What kind of morality is it to blow up bridges in Iraq when we're not using developing programs to build bridges in our own country? This is a totally destructive condition that we're in. And with respect to health care, you know, I've gone around the country and talked to people about health care. I have a presentation on my website about the importance of a national health care plan. And I will tell you that we are at a moment where we have the resources. We're already paying for universal standard of care. We're just not getting it because of the for-profit nature of health care. You look at how the profits of the pharmaceutical companies, you look at the profits of the insurance companies. Health care for profit should not be permitted in a society which has a shred of morality. And so I know that even in the district where there are many middle-class homeowners and some upper middle class, that a single illness in a family can wipe out a family financially, even if people have health insurance, because there are limits to all insurance. And the rate of bankruptcies in America have climbed significantly. Over half of the bankruptcies are attributable to health care bills. And when you consider how serious this is, you realize that we have a major economic crisis in this country because of the cost of health care and because it's a for-profit system. We're the only industrialized democracy that doesn't cover the health care of our people. So here again, I have a plan for that. And it's important. This is another reason why we have to get out of Iraq. We have to start changing the discussion and start working constructively and start working for peace and building the beloved community again and proving to ourselves that government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Lincoln said, shall not perish.
Well, you know, it occurs to me, Congressman, that in all that you have discussed here with me, everything is a war issue, isn't it?
It all relates to the war. We have been terrorized and fear-mongered into being afraid of every strange or slightly darker face that we might see in America. But the fact of the matter is, if we get our house in order in the way that you describe it, Congressman, the likelihood of people with religious agendas or fanatical agendas or whatever you want to call it in some far-flung corner of the globe 10,000 miles away, the likelihood of them wanting to kill us if we have our house in order it decreases significantly, does it not?
No question about it. We're creating more animosity towards the United States by having attacked a nation which did not attack us. We, according to the Lancet study, have been responsible for over 600,000 excess deaths in Iraq, 90% of them due to the war, and at least 20% of them due directly to the actions of coalition forces. I mean, we are making enemies all over the world, but we have to change that. We have to change our thinking about this. We cannot dominate the world. We should not try. We cannot go around the world in search of dragons to slay.
Well, it's that kind of arrogance that breeds the hate, isn't it?
Well, it does, and so, you know, I think that this is a moment when we need to consider the imperative of human unity, that all of us around the world are interconnected and we are interdependent. That what affects any one of us affects all of us. This imperative for human unity is actually a statement from which derives from the essence of what it means to be a United States. The unity of the United States was not simply about a unity of 50 geographical territories. It's about human unity. It's about the unity of all people. And so this is the time in the history of the world when the United States needs to live its truth, needs to live its dream, needs to live its purpose. And war does not do that for us. We have a right to defend itself, but our leaders don't know the difference between offense and defense. And we attacked a nation which did not attack us. We have to stop using war as an instrument of policy. We have to put away our nuclear weapons. We have to beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks, and create a vision of a nation which sustains people, which enables people to grow, which gives people hope and gives people a chance to lead a decent life.
Well, you know, this is a very we pride ourselves on our progressive spirit and our liberalism. What you just said, though, Congressman, I can't imagine that. Although we have been divided by a lot of hate mongers, I can't imagine that message wouldn't reach out. That's in a way, Congressman, that's a conservative message as well, isn't it?
Well, to me, the underlying truth of America is that out of many we are one. That was our first motto. E pluribus unum. And when I out of many, one. When I'm in Congress looking at the huge glass presentation that hangs over the Capitol, hangs over the House of Representatives, it is a eagle etched into the ceiling of the House. And that eagle spreads its wings widely, and that eagle has a left wing and a right wing. And it needs two wings to fly. And we need to make sure the left wing is repaired and that it can help the eagle soar in a way that it hasn't. And so my role is to help repair this the nation's dream and to enable our nation to take flight again.
Well, Congressman, you have my support. You have the support of this network. You have the support of thousands of people who are hearing this program right now. We have a banner up at the top of our website.
What is your website address?
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And then we will, you know, we'll link to you.
Oh, well, thank you very kindly.
And could you send us a copy of this?
I'll be happy to. I'll get in touch with with Andy tomorrow. And I'll get an email address, and I will make sure that a copy of this recording goes to him post-haste.
Oh, that would be great. Well, you could send it to D. Kucinich at AOL.
Oh, okay. Okay, wonderful. I'll do that, too.
Okay, thank you very much.
Congressman Kucinich, I can't tell you, you speak to my hopes for the America that I was taught growing up existed, and the America that was worth not only fighting and dying for, but an America that was worth living and hoping and praying for.
and we'll be there with you along all along the way.
Thanks, and let's talk again soon.
I hope so. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Take
now.
Care. I don't. I can't. I can't tell you how that inspires me. This is profound stuff. Did you hear anything in that conversation that sounds like the wishy-washy, namby-pamby, the focus-grouped, politicked-up stuff that comes our way every 4 years? Or did it sound to you like real American hope? Did it sound to you like a way out of the morass and the mire and the hate and the death and the destruction? Is this worth working for to you? You're not going to get this, you see. You're not going to get this from triangulators and mainstreamers and members of the DLC. You're only going to get this from somebody who is more in tune and more committed to realities and truths than they are to the advancement of their own personal and political well-being. This isn't politics. This is actual, honest-to-God patriotism, what you heard from Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Click the banner at the top of the network rep website. It'll take you right to Congressman Kucinich's site. Do what you can. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
So won't back your war. You say I'm on the enemy's side. So not on yours. You say you'll fight for freedom. Right to choose. Then you try to silence my voice. Well, you got another thing coming to you. Cause I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot. You don't make us safe. You only attack. If you put your fist in someone's face, they'll knock you in the back.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Believe the environment is issue number one. Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the U.K., and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing as cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. or visit our website at www.ruintuit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
That concluded our interview with Congressman Kucinich, and now we will go on to Congressman Rahal. But I want you to think about what you just heard that man say. This man will be running for president in 2008. When he was young, he was poor. He knows what it is to be homeless. He knows what health care means to America. This is the man that could represent you, if you want it bad enough. What kind of America do you want? Do you want one to where it's a slave nation and you go to work every day and you don't make ends meet and your family goes hungry? And no, I'm not going overboard. There's a lot of families that are doing that right now. There are shanty towns going up in Florida for people who are homeless. These are the people that are forgotten. We can't save anybody else because we're not saving ourselves. Congressman Kucinich wants America to be all that America can be. But we need to stand together for that. And on the night that George Bush is going to get on national TV and tell you what he thinks that America should be, here's a man who's telling you what we should be, what we need to stand for. We're out slaying dragons. This isn't a fairy tale. This is reality. And reality doesn't look too good right now, does it? So now we're going to hear from a gentleman from West Virginia and see what he stands for. What we need to do is for these people who speak out and want to do better for America, we need to support them. We need to show them that we support them. Email them. Call them. Support them through monetary donations if you can. Because they don't have the big war chests that the Republicans have. The Republican Party will throw money out the window to get what it wants. We don't have that kind of money and we don't have that kind of time. So without further ado, here is Congressman Rahal.
We're joined by Congressman Nick Rahal. My congressman, I'm proud to say. Congressman Rahal, are you there?
Yes, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You, sir?
Fine, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on the show because I had a feeling you could offer perspective in what's going on in the Levant. We have a disengaged president, Congressman Rahal. What can we do about what's going on there?
Well, you're exactly right about that disengaged. If we look back to his first years in office, he thought President Clinton went too far in personal diplomacy. So George Bush went exactly the opposite and went for the first few years without doing anything as regards moving the peace process forward. I sent him a letter last Friday basically saying that I was in Beirut 24 years ago when the Israeli bombardment was aimed at ridding Lebanon of the PLO, and innocent civilians were losing their lives. And President Ronald Reagan got on the phone almost 24 years to this very day, as a matter of fact, and called then Prime Minister Begin, said, enough's enough. We'll negotiate our way out of this, which is what happened. And I've asked this president, I'm trying to find the letter here. I said to him in my letter last week that it's time for him to call the Prime Minister of Israel and say enough's enough. He's calling Arab leaders and asking them to use their influence on Hezbollah and Hamas, which is good. I give him credit for that. But why not include the one country we have influence over in the region, Israel?
That only seems reasonable to me, Congressman. Not only because we have influence, but because by complaining about the deliberate, and I think they're deliberate. I mean, when you send a missile into an apartment complex, you've got to know beforehand that civilians are going to die.
Exactly.
Friday evening, Congressman, I set a pox on both their houses.
Exactly. Hezbollah is stupid. I don't know what got into them to take this move, unless it was Iran pushing them because the games they're playing in the UN Security Council with their nuclear program. Or what the motives are. It's hard to determine the motives. But it did give the Prime Minister of Israel, the new Prime Minister, who was rather virgin when it comes to warfare, having not been in the military as all previous Israeli Prime Ministers have been, it gives him a chance now to prove his mettle, to stand up and say, hey, I can be as tough as any war Prime Minister of Israel. And so it gives him a chance to do a little bravo. I hope Israel does not have designs on reoccupying Lebanon. That's a quagmire for them. They should have learned that after 18 years of such an occupation. But today they sent ground troops back into Lebanon. That's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign at all.
It's the bottom line here, Bob. It's time for cooler heads to prevail if we want to have any prayer for peace.
Well, when I saw the Lebanese prime minister openly weeping. My heart broke because, frankly, he has no ability to rein in Hezbollah.
No, he does not. And Hezbollah is trying to agitate Israel. There's no doubt about it. They want Israel to come back in and reoccupy Lebanon. They want Israel to continue along this path of tearing down the pro-democratic, pro-American government of Lebanon. Some year and a half in place now that we all had hope for. After the Cedar Revolution?
Well, I seem to recall President Bush out there actively rah-rahing the Lebanese government. Was I mistaken?
No, you were not mistaken. He has mentioned some words. He doesn't want to see the Israelis hurt the Sinora government. That's the prime minister of Lebanon, Sinora. But he can do a little more than just give that little mouthy action. And the actions of today, the turmoil of today, is hurting a moderate Palestinian government, a Prime Minister Abbas in West Bank and Gaza. That's the goal of the radical left, the Iranians and Syrians and the Hamas and Hezbollah, is to wreck the middle ground.
Well,
where there might be a chance for peace.
Well, Congressman Rahal, it seems like every time we disengage, something like this happens. I'm reminded of July of 1990, when a cable went out from then Secretary of State James Baker III, who said to Saddam Hussein, "We have no opinion on your border disagreement with Kuwait. The issue is not associated with America."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can have any greater disengagement than that. And the next thing you know, tanks are rolling into Kuwait City.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a war, and we lost American lives. We got Gulf War syndrome out of it. I'll do the real hardcore stuff, Congressman, and say that. But this administration and these Republicans seem, by their unwillingness to engage, it seems like almost that there is a further goal out there that they somehow, that this is good for them. I mean,
Remember Dick Cheney's speeches about when we were going to overthrow Saddam, how that would further the Palestinian peace process? Well, even President Bush said that. How when we get rid of Saddam Hussein, we'll get rid of the suicide bombers, we'll get rid of those who back the terrorists.
Oh, I remember it well. And what scares me to death, Congressman?
I don't think so.
No, what scares me to death is that this Republican White House is playing checkers while Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas and Iran are all playing chess.
Oh, you're exactly right.
Because
blame Iran for wanting to develop the nuclear bomb. They want to be treated like North Korea is treated.
Right, because he won't mess with North Korea.
No.
And that seems to be the lesson that has been taught here.
Well, it's that type of pick and choose. And that type of potato couch diplomacy is sit back and just watch. and the type of lip service diplomacy that's given to pro-democracy, pro-reform,
it's
causing one of the ingredients causing the turmoil today. There's just no question about it. You have to be careful what you wish for.
Well, I'm scared to death, Congressman, to be quite honest, and maybe at this point in time this is where I turn into a paranoid lunatic. But I am scared to death that there are factions out there, both within the White House and across the ocean, that think if they can just sit back and let this get nasty enough, that it will conveniently afford the Bush administration the opportunity to loose the hounds of war upon Iran.
Oh yeah,
that's
exactly a fear that I have, Bob, because all the neocons are having a field day as we speak. They're salivating over the buildup in world opinion, even some Arab governments, and legitimately so. They ought to be criticizing Hezbollah as they have. I haven't said it yet on this program. I'm not condoning a thing Hezbollah has done or Hamas has done. Matter of fact, I've condemned them. I condemned them in the letter to the president.
Right, as they should be.
Stupid. And it does. It plays right in the hands of the neocons who would love to see a third war front for the United States.
And I have a feeling that some of our so-called enemies would like to see that third front, too, because history teaches us that even huge military powers are hard-pressed to succeed by themselves in a multiple-front war.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And Israel cannot take on a third front. They're already with battling Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and it's unlikely, and this is where Syria and Iran obtain their gutsiness these days. It's unlikely Israel is going to bomb either of those countries, especially when they have the little helpless country of Lebanon as a chessboard.
Yeah, I don't know how many people realize that
play their games.
The Lebanese army is only 70,000 strong.
That's correct.
And it is made up of a combination of what used to, once upon a time, was Walid Jumblatt's Druze militia, and Hezbollah, and Shia, and Sunni, and they're all thrown together
and
in this. Right.
Yes.
And should Lebanon take action against Hezbollah, there's every likelihood in the world, is there not, that army will just splinter into factions again and welcome back to the Civil War.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Well, Congressman,
a war of epidemic proportions.
If you and I can figure this out in a conversation on a little radio show, why cannot a White House with that purports to have absolute public policy and strategic geniuses, why can't they figure it out?
Well, that's a good question, Bob. It's a sad question to have to ask, but it's right to the point. They just don't have the wherewithal. They don't have the will, I should say. The will.
Well, what bothers me, I think, most is the like I said, the disengagement. And, of course, we have been beaten over the head for the last 6 years with pronouncements on what a follower of Jesus Christ, George Bush, is. And frankly, I was talking with some of my colleagues on another one of the programs on our network Saturday evening, and I said, you know, if you're a student of the teachings of Christ, then you find out that with the advent of grace, the concept that the sins of the fathers would be visited upon the sons was done away with. And yet that's what we're watching happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need that. Well, is there any congressional action that can be taken? You wrote that very well-worded letter that reminded George Bush about Ronald Reagan's the phone call to Menachem Begin. Is there any possibility of raising a bit of a hue and cry along those lines in the halls of Congress?
Well, unfortunately, I can raise it, which I have already. But there's less of a willingness or the courage from this body, quite honestly, than there is down at the White House. There will be resolutions going through here in the next couple of days. Well, one of which I've even helped word, because I think it's a more middle of the road, which condemns Hezbollah for what they've done, but it also says that there should be respect for innocent loss of life and civilian infrastructure, etc. And there'll probably be one others going through this body that will be so one-sided, so lopsided as to make it appear that any action taken, it doesn't matter what action taken by the Israelis, we're going to say yes, go for it, but without even knowing ahead of time what it may be.
Just handing,
and
just
that's
handing
not in America's best interest at all. Too.
Just the handing them by way of a congressional resolution, handing a blank check.
Exactly, and that's not in America's best interest to give any country that type of a blank check, that type of pat on the back to go do whatever you want before we even know what you're doing.
All of this so grieves me, Congressman. I've gone back and reread my history. I went back and reread a history of the Crusades, and it reads, what happened 1,000 years ago reads like news reports from today. Attacks on Acre, attacks on Haifa, attacks on Tyre, on Sidon, on Citadel Fortress that became Beirut. 1,000 years. 1,000 years. And it seems that we are not just on the path of, but bent on repeating the same tragic mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you can help cooler heads to prevail. Is there anything that people can be watching for, or perhaps go to Thomas and keep an eye out for, and urge their congressmen in their districts to get aboard?
Well, the best thing would be just to pray for a ceasefire, and that all parties be urged to cool it right now. You know, in these past cycles of violence, the Israelis, of course, say, no, we're not going to negotiate, we're not going to have a prisoner exchange. They hold hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinian prisoners. Many of whom don't have the first drop of blood on their hand, but you know,
haven't been tried, haven't been charged, a little like
exactly.
Guantanamo.
Exactly. And you know, it ends up there are negotiations. Now, Hezbollah, perhaps they were wrong. Yeah, they struck out first in this particular cycle of violence, and they were wrong in what they did. But I guess the best way out right now is to give back the Israeli soldiers and then know that with international help, with U.S. pressure, I would hope that there will be some exchanges in the future. May not be exact quid pro quo today. You follow me?
Yes, I do. And there,
an unwritten understanding that down the road, there'll be some Lebanese Palestinian prisoners released that don't have blood on their hands.
And it shouldn't be too difficult to determine that.
No.
And then the slow, sad repetition of the rebuilding of Beirut begins anew. I can't help recalling that for many years Beirut was referred to as the Paris of the Levant.
Yes. That's exactly right, Bob.
And
it was destroyed, then rebuilt, and now it's back to being destroyed again.
Well, Congressman, I wish you the very best in your efforts, and I thank you very kindly for joining me for this conversation and for sharing your wisdom and your observances with our audience here at the Head On Radio Network.
Thank you, Bob.
It's been a real pleasure.
Enjoyed being with you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye now.
Take care.
My Congressman, Nick Rahal, a man that I'm mighty proud to have as my Congressman. Because in this time, it takes a lot of courage to do what Congressman Rahal is doing and to stand up and say, make it stop, when an entire executive branch of the government is bent on negligence and letting it continue. I am proud of Nick Rahal right now.
You just heard from our congressman from West Virginia. What does that tell you? You know, West Virginia has been the butt end of jokes forever. But that man, he sounds wonderful. I believe he stands for what he says, too. We're coming up to the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll have Pastor Dan to kind of keep on with the theme of where the religion and the politics meet. Let's see what he says about it. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'm Agnes Kincaid.
Words are made to bend. The bigger, the better. Some stolen from Japan. Collected from around the world. Make sure they can. Life, yeah.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush speaks to Congress and the nation this evening from the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Tonight's State of the Union speech will be his next-to-last address while in office and the first facing a new Democratic Congress. Mr. Bush will appeal to Congress to back his new plan for a troop surge in Iraq against a bipartisan rising tide of U.S. representatives who are against it. The president is also expected to focus on domestic issues in the speech. He'll present ideas on how to reduce America's dependence on foreign oil. The Army general, who is nominated to be the senior commander in Iraq, appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee today for the start of his confirmation hearings. Lieutenant General David Petraeus described the situation in Iraq as dire. As a second U.S. aircraft carrier group heads to the Persian Gulf, the U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs issued a warning to Iraq to, quote, back down in its attempts to control the region. The top U.S. diplomat ruled out direct negotiations between Washington and Tehran and repeated that Iran must halt its nuclear enrichment program. In Moscow, meantime, authorities say they've completed their billion-dollar arms deal with Iran. The missile sale has been criticized by Washington and Israel both. A private U.S. security company helicopter owned by Blackwater USA shot down today over a mostly Sunni neighborhood in central Baghdad. The five American civilians aboard all died, according to a U.S. military official. Ethiopian troops have begun to withdraw from Somalia after helping drive out the Islamic militia. A Somali government official confirmed this and stated that they are grateful for the important role they, the Ethiopian troops, played. Afghanistan's ambassador to the U.S. says he expects a resurgent Taliban to step up their attacks this spring. He also said the focus on the Iraq war took resources and attention away from his own country. Outside of a U.S. military base in eastern Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber blew himself up in a crowd of workers. 10 people were killed, 14 were wounded. Opening arguments began in the CIA leaked trial of Lewis Scooter Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff. Libby's defense attorney portrayed him as a sacrificial lamb. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just cost $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The movie Dreamgirls earned 8 Oscar nominations but was shut out of the Best Picture category. Academy Award nominations were announced early this morning from Hollywood. Al Gore's movie about global warming, An Inconvenient Truth, nominated for Best Documentary Feature and Best Original Song. The FDA may set a higher standard for contraceptives, which must be met before they can go on to market. The government says that the newer birth control pills seem to be less effective in preventing pregnancy. Texas has announced it'll spend $3 billion to establish the state as a world leader in the fight against cancer. The London Stock Exchange has until Friday to accept or reject a takeover bid by NASDAQ. They're dominated by U.S. tech listings, offering $5.5 billion, which the LSC says so far is insufficient. Employee stock options took a substantial toll on Yahoo company earnings last quarter. Yahoo company officials report a fourth quarter profit drop of 61%. Sales rose 13%. That's the lowest sales growth for Yahoo in the past several years. Light sweet crude oil trading at $55.04 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. That's up $2.46 at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 56 points at 12,533. NASDAQ flat. The S&P 500 up 5. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It's 6 minutes after the hour, and you're back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm Agnes Kincaid. We're doing a year in review since the State of the Georgia's address tonight. We'll be playing right around 9 o'clock, and our friend Mike Malloy will be doing a play-by-play review. Now, we've heard from Congressman Kucinich, who will be running for the presidency in 2008. We also heard from our honored Congressman Nick Joe Rahal here in West Virginia. Both of these gentlemen have something in common. They're working for you. They're not working for corporate interests or what they feel they can get out of it. They're there for you. How many people can you say that's actually working for you? Now, there are employers out there that do have your best interest. Google. Google provides all sorts of things for their employees. They're wonderful. But for that one, there are hundreds, maybe thousands out there that don't have your best interest. They don't care if your child gets sick. They don't care if your health plan goes into the toilet. And how long does Cobra coverage cover you? Not very long. If you don't have health care, one emergency room visit can completely demolish you for a couple of months, depending on what you have done. CAT scan, a couple thousand, easily. So what are you going to do? Do you rely on faith? Faith is important. It's something that you really need. It doesn't mean you have to have faith in a certain entity. It just means you have to have faith. You have to be able to look forward and think that tomorrow is going to be better so that you'll get up out of bed and you'll do it all over again. Now, we see that politics and religion coincide quite a bit. It doesn't make sense because what you're hearing isn't religion. It's someone speaking on the behalf of a corporation or a government so that they can make something from it. You don't need that. That's not what it's about. We're all in this together. John says it all the time. You know, if we work together, we can make a better world. But you just don't see it. We all feel isolated, apart from each other. That's the one wonderful thing about the horn. It brings us all together. It makes us one. It's like a family. We support each other. We support ideas. There's not a whole lot out there that does that. There's not a whole lot that stands for you. It's a lonely world. And there are people who want you to feel lonely, to feel isolated, to not be able to reach out and do something. They want you helpless. We are not helpless. You're only a victim if you want to be a victim. You can stand up and you can fight this. And there are so many ways. Even someone who thinks that they don't have anything, there's someone out there worse off than you. Dying's easy. Living is the hard part. What do you want to do? Do you feel like that you don't have anybody to stand up for, that you're alone? You're wrong. There are others out there that need you. It just depends on what you want to do with it. How strong do you want to be? Don't be a victim. You're smarter than that. You're a better person than that, and the world's better for you. Now we're going to hear from a gentleman by the name of Pastor Dan. One of the head-on interviews that was just beautiful. We don't talk about religion a lot of times in the way that a lot of people would want us to. There are people that disagree with our points of view for making fun of the religious industry. It's not a faith, it's an industry. When someone wants you to pay them to bring you to God, it's wrong. You are the one that will bring yourself to your faith. Nobody else can do that. Doesn't matter what you believe in. Just matters that you believe in something. Something that gives you strength. Something that makes you feel better about what you have to face the next day. So without further ado, here is Pastor Dan. Hope you enjoy it.
Pastor Dan, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry you had to wait. I sincerely apologize. Let me let everybody know who you are. And this is Pastor Dan from Street Profits.
Right.
You are part. You've been partaking of the Progressive Faith Blog.
Progressive Faith Blog Convention.
Yeah, Blog Convention. Okay. See, I see con and I think conservative, and my brain just
right. Well, there is
fries.
Also a Progressive Faith Blog Con blog, which is a separate entity.
Okay. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, please, sir.
I am a United Church of Christ minister living in central Pennsylvania. I preach at the moment at a tiny, tiny Baptist church up in coal country.
Okay.
We have about 9 or 15 people in church on Sunday morning.
Sounds like one I could actually attend and feel good about, to be quite honest.
Well, you would stick out like a sore thumb because we don't have that many visitors, but you would be welcome. I've been blogging at Daily Coast for a little over 2 years now and have been running Street Profits, which is the first official offshoot of Daily Coast for about a year.
Well, in participating in the blog con that you were involved with, this was specifically a gathering, though, of progressive people of faith. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's the first of the kind kind of convention. The way I understand it is that there is a God blog con, which is really filled with more conservative Christians. And some folks saw that and decided they weren't too comfortable with it and decided to put together something for faithful progressives. And so here we are.
Well, what kind of a mix of the faith community do you have there, Dan?
We had, I want to say, about half Christians and maybe 25% or 33% Jews. And we had a couple Muslims, couple Buddhists, some assorted Unitarian Universalists, and actually a couple atheists were there too. So real nice mix of people.
Well, I should think so. But and being progressives, you do certainly differentiate yourself from the what I call the right wing religion industry. Just to let you know,
I'm not in a place where I can accept that folks on the in the religion industry. I don't recognize the Jesus that they claim to worship. To be quite honest with you, Pastor Dan, I just don't. My Bible says, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." It doesn't say, "Come on, y'all, and let's go make them little children suffer."
Right.
Exactly.
We like to think about Jesus as a peacemaker rather than a warlord.
Right. The Prince of Peace, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you got it.
That being the case, what kind of topics did you discuss?
Well, really, the purpose of the convention was to get the leadership together for kind of a retreat, to introduce ourselves to one another, just build some connections, and you know, see if we could forge a way together, forward together. So we talked about how to blog on scripture, about different prayer styles. We had a Muslim prayer leader who came and walked us through Friday evening prayers at the mosque, which is very interesting.
Oh, I should think.
And talked about some different issues, how to respond to the religious right, poverty, war. So we talked a lot about the situation in Lebanon in that.
I don't see how you couldn't, frankly.
Right. And we were all pretty tense on that one because we had a few of the Jewish folks there and a few of the Muslim folks, and we all thought that, you know, well, it was going to get interesting. But it turned out to be a very fruitful conversation.
Well, it seems to me when you get away from that part of the world, the dialogue can actually begin.
Right.
Did you experience that?
Well, the reason it worked was that we managed to talk about the kinds of connections that people have to that part of the world. So, you know, the Jewish folks were able to step back and say, of course we have friends in Israel. We have relatives there. That doesn't mean that we support everything the state of Israel does, or that we are in favor of some of their more colonial projects. And it was the same way from the Muslim folk. You know, they're not going to associate themselves with Hezbollah. They don't believe in that. You know, they're peaceful people. So, yeah, it wound up being a very good conversation.
Well, I'm curious. You mentioned that one of the things that you did dialogue on and discuss was how to respond to the religious right. Did you, straight up, did you come up with any answers? Because I spend a lot of time, a lot of my personal time thinking about things like that, and I haven't, because frankly, I see these people and I mean, things like the generation of vipers comes to mind, and the next thing you know, I'm just running around the room screaming. Is there a way to approach and engage the followers of Dobson and Falwell and Robertson and D. James Kennedy and James Robison and Swaggart and that? Is it possible?
Oh, that, absolutely it is. Let me tell you a story that I told at the convention. A few years ago, I had a secretary who was a real follower of Dobson. I mean, listened to him five nights a week, took his parenting advice, his gospel, I mean, the whole nine yards, had all of his books. And one day, towards the end of my time at that church, he made some comment to me about those, you know, those blankety-blank gays, or you know, something about gay marriage. And I thought, well, you know what, I don't have anything to lose here. So I'm going to find out what this is about. And I said to her, well, you know, what do you mean? What's your problem? And, you know, took what she was saying seriously instead of just blowing it off. Well, so I kind of walked her back through it. So when you say, you know, gay marriage is ruining your family, what do you mean by that? Well, after a while, the real story began to emerge. She and her husband are having a terrible time making ends meet. She has to run went all over two counties to get her kids to enrichment programs and school and here and there. And she's afraid, after her alcoholic brother-in-law died, that she and her husband are going to have to start raising her alcoholic sister-in-law's children. And she can barely keep her own family going. So, and her, you know, her job doesn't pay enough, and they don't appreciate her, and on. And so I finally said to her, well, it sounds to me like the problem is not gay marriage for you. The problem is really that you feel like the world is collapsing around you, and you don't know what to do. She said, yeah, that's really it. You know, the world's falling down. So what you have to be able to do is to take those people seriously, because they're really worried about what's going on in their lives and in the world around them. Now, that's not to say that they always deal with that appropriately.
Well, they've been sold. I mean, it's safe to say then, isn't it, Pastor Dan? They've been sold a bill of goods.
In many ways, yes. Yep, absolutely. It's a really easy book to write that those thinking homosexuals are ruining your family. Because there's an easy cause of your problem.
But it turns out it's the people that, in large part, it's the people they put in office who are actively engaged in a war on their family values.
Yes, in many ways, yes. You know, because what happens, as I'm sure you know, is that the Republicans get into power on that platform of family values, but then they turn around and they actually govern on corporate values.
Well, they do everything they can to take the American family apart. I'm sympathetic. There is no more sympathetic human being out there than me to issues of family values. My producer, to whom you spoke, that's my lovely wife.
Yeah.
And we're raising three kids.
Right.
And we raised four. One of them's technically an adult now, and we're just grateful to have her there.
She's always just technically adult.
Amen. You know. But I see what's out there. We live how difficult it is to get from day to day.
Right.
But it's no fault of a couple of guys wanting to pick out a silver service. This is, you want to talk about the attack on the American family. The Bush White House gave its staffers $4,000 and $5,000 raises, and then the Congress gave itself a raise at the same time that they couldn't find the Christian charity in their hearts to raise the minimum wage from $5 to $7. You want a war on traditional family values? There's the trench.
Isn't it amazing that the Congress can raise its own salary by thousands of dollars and yet leave the minimum wage untouched? I mean,
and what
does it say in the Bible? The worker shall be paid his wages.
Yeah, and in the parable of the worker, the guy who comes in at quarter to five gets the same day rate as the guy who worked all day.
Absolutely.
Now, and yet, what drives me crazy, Pastor Dan, is that I have to sit and watch, because you know it's the nature of my job. I have to sit and watch these, pardon me, freaks. Sit there and talk religious psychobabble about family values, and then turn around and stick a knife in the American family. I mean,
right.
this is not Jesus conduct. This is Judas conduct.
I wouldn't say that, and I'll tell you why not. Because Judas is a traditional name for Jews.
Okay, well, I stand corrected.
Okay. So, you know, throughout history, it has been, you know, the Judas and the Jews who killed Christians. So stay away from that. But, yeah, I see where you're going with that.
And they're scaring me to death. You're out there in the blogosphere. You're associated with Daily Coast. I mean, you know what a varied experience this can be.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about a website on this program, and my friends, I don't refer to people as my audience. I'm not some sort of royalty. But my friends who listen to this program have gone and looked at a website called RaptureReady.com.
Yes.
And with the escalation of the horror and the death and the misery in the Levant, there have actually been postings there hollering, "Come, Lord Jesus, if it just gets a little bit worse, I really think we're moving into the last stage of the end time, and I feel so bad for you people who are going to be left behind because I'm flying to the clouds."
Well, here's what you have to get about that. The hook in that is that God has a plan for us. And God is going to take care of me when the chips come down, right? And God is going to pull me up to heaven when the moment comes. So there's a definite sense of trust in divine providence there. But what they're not able to see is how destructive that is in the world around them. You with me so far?
Yes, I am. Oh, I am.
Okay. So what you have to be able to do is to help those people understand that maybe God has a plan that's also going to take care of the rest of the world and be just about it as things go along. Because, you know, they're not dumb.
No, they're not. There is some sophistication in this, and these people scare me because, among other things, I'm sure you're familiar with it, this Left Behind video game that's going out to pimply-faced adolescent teenagers now.
Right.
That has soldiers who have a prayer button who go out and enhance their game-playing. You know, you get better in the game by killing the queers and by killing the Muslims and by killing the apostates.
Right. Right.
This is what makes it difficult for me, Pastor Dan.
Dehumanizing,
yes,
is what it is, and what it does is it promotes this vision of faith of being sort of, it's me and Jesus, and all the rest of y'all can just go to hell.
Precisely, and there's that apocalyptic thing that happens afterward that's really horrifying, and it's the dirty little secret of the religious right. And it's a secret they keep from their pals in the apocalyptic Jewish community. And that is that after Jesus gets in his holy rolls and comes back to earth, these people think that they get to put the Jews to the sword.
Right. Right. And everybody converts.
Yeah.
And we all end up Christians in the end, right?
And frisbees and wheat checks in the New Jerusalem.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, so this is the kind of stuff that we're trying to deal with or work with here, and we're doing that by working within the progressive tradition at large and trying to build some connections between places like Daily Coast and some of the faith blogs out there, and helping really to reintegrate the religious tradition back into the progressive community.
Well, so much of it started there.
Exactly.
The civil rights movement started in the Highland School, I believe it was, in East Tennessee.
Right.
And that had religious roots and it had labor roots.
Absolutely. Abolition.
Abolition had its roots in religion.
Yep. So did prohibition, but we'll off right over that one, right?
Yeah, we'll take that as read.
Exactly. You know, you make a mistake every once in a while. Yeah, sure. You know, there's the whole social gospel movement in the late 1800s, which helped work hand in hand with the social work. So
yeah,
that comes out of the faith. Believe it or not, the Pledge of Allegiance, without, under God, was written by a Baptist minister.
Yes. 1800. There's a lot of it there, and so much of it has been, I mean, what other word can we use, Pastor Dan, besides perverted?
Right.
It was pointed out by one of our faith-oriented friends at one point that the word Antichrist, which is, you know, it's the darling of the religious right, it never appears in the New Testament in the singular. The word Antichrist appears in the plural.
Hmm.
There shall be many Antichrists.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that, actually.
And that turned a light bulb on for me.
Right.
Now, and it would seem to me, you know, and I've asked the question repeatedly, you know, if the road to hell is broad and everybody's going to be on it, shouldn't some of these right wingers in their mega churches kind of have a look down at the width of the asphalt?
Right. Absolutely. Well, and what's particularly disturbing to me is that many of those people, not all, but many of them, are doing it not for religious reasons, but for political gain.
Gosh, yes.
You know, Ralph Reed, you know, he puts on a good act, but when you really get down to it, he's not much of a Christian. He's a secular political activist. Jack Abramoff, you know, apparently is personally a very pious man, but he wasn't running around with Reed and Tom DeLay doing the work of the kingdom of God.
Well, you can't hardly go out to the Marianas Islands and militate for low wages for workers and see to it that Chinese teenage girls are forced into prostitution and abortions and come back and sit down and break bread and holler Hosanna.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the question is, and we've talked about some about George Bush's use of the brown word today.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, and I've got a rather negative viewpoint on it. What does it take? What does it take to, because you see, Pastor Dan, that I was raised in the Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Southern Baptist Church. I describe myself as a recovering Southern Baptist.
Right. I heard you used to walk around with a Bible in your back pocket.
Yeah. I mean, I've walked the walk. I come from that place. There is a 94-year-old woman who lives next to my father in Alabama who has done her best to walk in the to walk in the footsteps of the carpenter for 94 years.
Right.
And yet, she will sit down and tell you that Bill Clinton was a godless man.
Right.
That was my home church that I came out of. The late 1980s, early 1990s, they paid a $25,000 honorarium to Oliver North to come and speak to them.
Oh, that's tacky.
Well, yeah, that is, forgive me, Pastor Dan, that is a dead church.
Yeah. Why? Because, they've given up, I don't want to say they've given up God, but they've given up spirituality in favor of a politics, is what that comes down to. If they have allowed their religion and their politics to become so intermingled that they can't tell where the one ends and the other picks up. And that's a really sad thing.
And they pollute the one at the advancement of the other.
You got it.
Well, Pastor Dan, where does after this with the BlogCon, what comes next?
Well, we're working on that.
We always are, aren't we?
Oh, goodness. You know, I think the most important thing that we can do is to simply advance that true narrative, to just get out there and say it in as many ways as we can, many different venues. Religion is not about hate. It's not about who it separates you from. It is not about getting one over on your neighbor. It's about helping your neighbor and finding a way to and uniting with the people of the world. We have allowed in this country the narrative that religion is about all of those negative things to just flourish. And people have not stood up and said, it's not true. And you'd be surprised how few people.
Well, some people, to be honest, right. Pastor Dan, some people have done that. Mm-hmm. They've been run out of their churches. I well remember the church in North Carolina 2 years ago, year and a half ago, in which the pastor excommunicated his Kerry voters for refusing to repent of voting for John Kerry.
Right. And this is, here's a word to the wise. That church collapsed not long after that. They are down to a third or less of their original members. Why? Because that pastor had some real problems that he took out through political means. And it wasn't good for the church. So if you're going to bring that kind of partisanship into the church, it's going to destroy it. And people of all political stripes should take caution from that story.
Well, absolutely, and my heart goes out to committed and practicing Roman Catholics who have had their dioceses split into not just over the child sexual abuse scandals that have rocked this nation, but over the business that went down again in the 2004 elections, where there were priests walking around saying John Kerry cannot have communion.
Right. Right. One of the things that the Interfaith Alliance is working on is a new election guide for churches, basically talking about the law, and this is what you can do and what you can't do. And they've divided it, they told me, into two parts. One is the law. These are the rules. But then here are some guidelines for what's ethical and what's not ethical, so that even if it were legal to kick the Democrats of your church out, it's not a very ethical kind of thing to do.
Not one of those WWJD moments, is it?
No, exactly. So to help them think through those kinds of things.
Well, Pastor Dan, we're running out of time, but tell people, please, where they can go to see this in action, how they can advance this effort, please.
You can come and find us at a number of sites. There's always freeprofits.com. That's my place. There is a site called talktoaction.com or .org, which is more focused on the religious right and issues of separation, talking about dominionism. You can hook up through Faith in Public Life, which is an organization out of D.C.,
okay,
or try the Velveteen Rabbi.
I saw that website, and I had to go see that.
She's great.
Anybody who can put up a site like that with a name like that, I got to go.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. All of these places have links to other organizations and blogs that you can get on. There's all kinds of good stuff out there.
Well, could I ask a favor of you, please, sir?
Sure.
We are a fledgling network,
mm-hmm,
but we are, in fact, America's other liberal network. Everyone knows that Air America is out there, and they produce a fine, fine product.
Right.
But we are not afraid to talk about issues of faith.
Right.
We're not afraid to talk about issues of community organizing, grassroots. I'm not the only host on this network. We have excellent talk coming from folks like our good friend Bruce Birch, Guy James, Mark Levine, John Fox. And we're really trying to change the dialogue. If you can tell, I hope, from our conversation here, what we bill ourselves here is as conversation radio as opposed to talk radio.
Right.
The one thing we don't have is a paid PR person or anything like that. We need word of mouth, Pastor Dan.
Okay.
If you would be so kind, please, if you can, just to let folks know that this conversation is out there for them to have.
Okay.
We would sincerely appreciate it. And it has been a joy having you on the program.
If you have a sound clip of the interview, send it over to me.
Okay. Could you, I tell you what, when we go to break, don't hang up. My darling wife will be there and pick you up off of hold, and I'll get an email from you, and we will send you that sound clip straight away.
And we'll get that posted with some links for you.
Well, thank you very kindly, Pastor Dan.
Thank you for having me on.
This has been a blessing.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise.
There is your conversation radio. There is your community. See, Bob said it perfectly there, where the other liberal voice out there, Air America, is still there, and there are others. There's no competition. Anyone who has to compete to join people together has some serious problems. We're all in this together. That man practices what he preaches. Now, I know this isn't Wednesday night prayer meeting. And we put that on there because politics and religion has become so intertwined. It's amazing, isn't it? If you read the Bible and don't just have it sitting on your mantelpiece, you realize that it's about people. It's about helping one another. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Not bearing false witness. Not putting other things before God. Now tonight you're going to have a man speaking to the United States of America, actually the entire world. What does he stand for? Does he seem godly to you? What's your faith? Does it matter if you believe in God or Yahweh, Jehovah, goddesses? It doesn't really matter, does it? Because we all are human beings. And we're supposed to be more evolved. But we're not. We're watching people that we love die. People that we've never met, never had any idea. We kind of set ourselves apart. But Pastor Dan, he made a really good point. Religion and politics don't go together. You don't kick someone out of a church because they're a liberal, or they're a Democrat, or they're a Republican, or whatever. Belief in something comes from your heart. You're a sentient human being. You have the right to feel the way that you need to feel. That's not what we stand for today. Everyone wants to tell you what you're supposed to believe in. What you're to stand for. Not a good idea, is it? Nobody likes to be told what they need to do. Even children rebel against that. I know that a lot of our listeners have families. And you know, you watch it. You ever seen a teenager roll their eyes at you when you're trying to give them those pearls of wisdom you've learned over the years? We're all kind of like that. We roll our eyes. But we don't say anything. We're good children. We sit back and we're told what to do. Don't you think it's time that we quit being children? That we stand up and become adults? Let our government know that they represent us, that we don't represent them. These are just people. They put their pants on just the way you do every day. They might eat better than you. They may not have to worry about their bills like you do. And they have retirement plans, do you? What are you counting on for your future? We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back to some more interviews and a couple of clips that I thought you'd be interested in. I hope that you're enjoying tonight as much as I am, because I love being here with you. And I thank my husband for giving me the chance to be here with you. So we will be back in just a moment.
Look around. Show me holy places not yet found. Let's disappear and we'll hide underground. We'll get high and we'll feel safe and sound. It comes around. Got my soul singing, my soul singing, soul.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network. Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Feeling a little unwell? You'll feel worse after you listen to Bush tonight. I'm Agnes Kincaid, sitting in for Bob. I told you before we went to break that I had a couple of clips for you that I thought that you'd be interested in. Well, you know how the right always has something nasty to say about the left? I have a clip here from Rush Limbaugh about Obama. Now, I want you to listen to this and let me know what you think, because it sounds to me like the boy is crushing, I mean hard, on Obama. But you tell me what you think. I find it really interesting. Here we go.
Gibson says, Obama's dirty little secret. He's a cigarette smoker. Question is, would you vote for a smoker as president? John, is that kind of an impediment for him?
Obama is seen as so very, very cool. I think a lot of people find him sexy. And I think even in today's America, there's a sense that there's something vaguely sexy about cigarettes. You've got fire in your hand.
Now, I love John McWhorter, and John McWhorter is brilliant, but where has he been? Is anybody portraying cigarette smoking as sexy? Well, Hollywood does. Hollywood, and I've, you know, it does. I'm going to infuriate some of you people, but it looks cool. I mean, people who know how to smoke cigarettes look cool. Why do you think Hollywood does it? They're freaking out in there on the other side of the glass. Don's face is turning four sheets of red. I'm not talking about it is cool. I'm saying it can be made to look cool. Why do you think... Which quote? Why do you think Hollywood does it? Why do you think movies... Why do you think kids end up trying it? It looks cool. They make it look cool. It's one of the big seductive problems with it. And this guy's effectively saying it here. He's saying there's something vaguely sexy about cigarettes. You've got fire in your hand. And now that's what he's saying is Obama can make smoking sexy. What if Obama is seen smoking in public and it is said because nobody wants to criticize him because he's above criticism, because he's a godlike figure to the godless. And you don't criticize gods or godlike figures. What if the whole anti-smoking bunch has to come out, because they're a bunch of libs too, has to find a way to justify Obama's coolness? Because he's got fire. If he's got fire in his hands, what has he got in his pants?
Need I say more? So in 2008, when our presidential candidates come forth, does that mean that Russia's going to vote for Obama because he's got fire somewhere? Uh-huh. Well, it looks like that he's back to carrying water. I think he was the one that said that he didn't want to carry water for that side anymore. It seems like that he's carrying more of a torch than a bucket of water. Now, we have more interviews to get to. And this one, I think you'll remember, is Rocky Anderson. This man has passion. He has grace. He's eloquent. I think that's what we're all looking for. We're not looking for somebody. I've heard it said that Bush appears to be a down-home type of guy. He's not a down-home type of guy. That man's never missed a meal in his entire life. And he doesn't care about you. He's made that clear. You see clips of him flipping people off, saying things when he doesn't have enough sense to know his mic is open. Yeah, I know. I've done that too. We're human. He doesn't appear to be human. He's wanting to take more people and send them back. Our guard. Our National Guard. We've been hit with catastrophes here. Katrina. You know, our good friend Sarge has been working so hard, along with everyone else, to get assistance to people, to when America should have been able to assist them. Give us your weak, your weary, your poor. We can't do that anymore, because we're all weak and weary and poor. We're an unwell nation. When you go to your doctor, and you're asked right off the bat, do you have health care? If you don't, you better pay up front. You won't be seen. There are people having problems staying in nursing homes now because Medicaid has been cut. They go into private meetings and cut it, even when your legislature doesn't know anything about it. Happened here in West Virginia. They're having to backtrack on that. Medicaid, big, huge cuts. Newborn testing, that's being cut too. you have a baby, you better hope that everything's okay. Our little Jacob that's up on our site, he wasn't well. He needed help. People were reaching out and helping. But don't you think our nation should do more for its people? It doesn't matter if you were born here, you came here, and you were naturalized. It doesn't matter. Borders are nothing more than imaginary lines. And we all stand together. Yeah, I realize that some people just doesn't, you know, they don't have it in them to care. They hate. They hate somebody because they're different, because they're a different color, they're a different religion. Find a reason. You don't wear the right clothes. Is that really a reason to hate somebody? That was one thing with the religion industry. They can find a reason to hate. They'll find a reason more than they will to love. They won't help the homeless. There's a few that's come out and stood up for them, but in general, they kind of turn their backs. Do you realize that every single person in this nation is very close to becoming homeless? All it takes is one catastrophe, one, to completely wreck your lives. There are people being sent overseas right now to Iraq. They're not going to make what they make here at their jobs. Do you really think that employers hold those jobs? Oh, I've heard, you know, this is a law. It's, folks, how many laws are being broken? Face it. Our government's breaking them every day. Stand up for the troops. My God, the VA is cutting spending like crazy. You want to support your troops? Make sure they have medical care. Make sure that they get to keep their homes. Make sure that their children are going to have a mother and father come back to them. Matter of fact, don't send them in the first place. You want to be a good American citizen? Then stand up for the citizens that are being sent away for nothing. How much does oil mean to you? Yeah, it's nice to have gasoline, and you're paying for it. And you're going to pay more. It's been a roller coaster ride ever since we started this. And you think that you're doing okay if they go down a few cents. You're not. When you have to maintain a budget to get back and forth to work, and you have to do without, is that doing okay? Is that working out for you? Doesn't work out for me. And I'll tell you right now, this is a job. This is an effort. This is a 24-hour, 7-a-day effort. How many of you called here when we were off the air? But we're right there for you. And we ask nothing. Because we believe in you. We believe in America. We believe in the troops. We believe in God. But you know what? People who don't really believe will castigate us. They don't like what we're saying because they know it's the truth. It hits home. When you listen to people who tell you the truth, support them. Get out there, vote for them, stump for them. Do whatever you can to make sure that they're the ones to represent you. We're going to go to the news here in a second and come back for our third and last hour. I hope that I've made a point tonight, because I'm not speaking for anyone but me. I'm a mom. I'm a woman. But most of all, I'm a human being. I don't have a particular religion other than I'm in the union of humanity. That's my union. You know why? Because we all belong to it. And the dues are that you support one another. Reach out and help your neighbor. Help yourself. You're good people, and you've got good hearts. I don't care if you're right wing, you're left wing, or you're the middle of the road. Do the right thing. We'll be back after this break.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is preparing to give a State of the Union address tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. In it, he'll focus primarily on domestic issues such as health care, education, and energy. Mr. Bush will present ideas on how America can lessen its dependence on foreign oil. He wants America to cut gasoline consumption by 20% by the year 2017 through greater use of ethanol and alternative fuels. On Capitol Hill today, the House voted to deny taxpayer-funded pensions to lawmakers who have been charged with felonies. The measure would take effect if lawmakers are convicted of crimes including treason, bribery, conspiracy, and perjury. In Washington, opening arguments began today in the CIA leaked trial of Louis Scooter Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald said Libby lied and destroyed a note that showed Cheney was involved early in the matter. Libby's defense attorney portrayed him as a sacrificial lamb and scapegoat for White House advisor Karl Rove. In Baghdad, two car bombs exploded today, killing 5 civilians and wounding 9 others. Also, 5 civilians, all of them believed to be American, were killed today when their helicopter crashed in a Sunni neighborhood. The aircraft was owned by private security company Blackwater USA. Also in Iraq, 3 more U.S. service members have died. 2 soldiers were killed yesterday, one in the Anbar province and the other in a roadside bombing. A Marine died of wounds he sustained Sunday near Baghdad. In eastern Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber detonated himself next to a group of laborers standing outside a U.S. military base. 10 people were killed, 14 others wounded. Afghanistan's ambassador to the U.S. says he expects a resurgent Taliban to step up their attacks this spring. He also said the focus on the Iraq war took resources and attention away from his country. In Lebanon, a general strike led by Hezbollah and other opposition parties has all but brought life to a standstill. Strikers are demanding a new government that's friendlier to Syria. 3 people have reportedly been killed and dozens others injured in street clashes. Starting today, everyone entering the U.S. will need a passport to cross the border from Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Only about a quarter of U.S. citizens have valid passports. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business coming up next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The FDA says birth control pills are not as effective as they used to be. A panel of experts will spend today and tomorrow discussing whether the government should set a higher standard for the drugs. The Conference Board reports that its index of leading economic indicators went up 0.3% in December. Economists credit improvements in the housing and job markets. The Conference Board also reports that U.S. labor productivity grew only 1.4% last year, the least amount in more than a decade. Bank of America's last quarterly earnings jumped 47%. The bank also reports its net income went up from about $3.5 billion last year to $5.25 billion this year. The CEO of Clothier Gap has resigned with a $14 million severance package. He was criticized for decisions that have eroded the Gap's place in the market. Employee stock options took a big toll on Yahoo company earnings last quarter. Company officials report a 61% drop in profit. And the London Stock Exchange has until Friday to accept or reject a takeover bid by NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is offering $5.5 billion, which the LSE says is insufficient. Light sweet crude is trading at $55.01. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is up 56 points at 12,533. NASDAQ flat, S&P 500 up 5. You can hear more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, I'm not Bob, but maybe I'll do. Good in a pinch, I suppose. We were just talking about the war in Iraq and our soldiers and jobs. And we have a friend on the line, Ed. And he had a couple of comments that he wanted to bring to the forefront. Hi, Ed.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing real good, and so are you. I mean, you're just doing a super job.
Thank you very much.
I'm surprised that you're not getting more calls. Maybe they don't know how to talk to somebody other than Bob.
Well, no, we've had some calls. I've just been running the interviews, and I was just chatting with you and figured I'd go ahead and get you on and let you say what you needed to say.
Okay, well, first of all, I wanted to say, what could you expect from an idiot like Rush Limbaugh? And then, the war, well, you know, let me make another comment on him. He was supposed to drop and quit carrying the Republican Party. They must have given him a raise.
Well, you know, you would think that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he's right back in there again. But, you know, you can't change a horse pile. It's still a horse pile.
That's true.
But on the jobs that these guys are supposed to have when they get back home,
yeah,
they'll probably still have them. They'll just have to go to China to get them because the law states that the employers will have those jobs waiting for them if they go to war or if they're called out like that. I'd like to know how they're going to fulfill that promise to these soldiers. That not only are they getting the short end through George Bush's cuts through the VA and in all the areas, and I'm speaking from a veteran standpoint, but you tell me how they're going to get these jobs back.
Well, they can't. I mean, some may come back, but the one thing that I think people forget, when you leave a position, that position still goes on, and it has to be filled by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
How many pitch hitters do you know that's going to get in there and do it for long enough for you to come back?
Well, if they come back. But, you know, you got to hand it to George Bush. He's created 3,000 and some jobs, ain't he?
Yeah.
You know, the guys he's killed?
Pretty much.
So, that's the only thing that I can say about him, and that's bad.
Oh, that's true. There's not a whole lot you can say about the man because he keeps telling us the economy's booming, and I'd like to know where the booming is coming from other than Iraq.
Yeah. Everything that is on in the news daily is for this company this year is going to cut 10,000 jobs, and the auto industry is going to cut so many they're buying out jobs. Well, for every one of those jobs in the auto industry, there are 7 jobs that revolve around us. So how much is there? And, yeah, you know, the stock market looks real good. But all it is one of the companies eating up the other one.
That's true.
That's what's driving up the stock. And it has no reflection at all on what the poor and the homeless are going to go through before this guy. You know, if he was out tomorrow, it would be a tough job for the Democrats to reestablish the jobs and the security that America had under Bill Clinton.
Well, you know, one thing that I find interesting, they talk about unemployment's down or it's up. It's really a kind of a bizarre indicator because when employment is lost, there are so many people that do drop off the unemployment rolls. They're not counted. Did they get a replacement job? Or are they just doing without? They don't count those people.
Yeah, they fell through the cracks. They don't count it. I'm telling you, they don't count them. And the only hope they got is get some job minimum wage or they don't even have to maybe, like carpenter's helper, for an example. They may be helpers and getting paid under the table. they're still unemployed. They're still without benefits.
That's right.
And so that's where we are on these jobs. And you know something? I'm going to listen to this idiot tonight. I know it's going to be repetition, and he's not going to address the real problems. But I want to hear how he can talk 15 minutes on anything that is worthwhile. I've got to see it, and I'll be in there cussing. So
remember your blood pressure.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, I just wanted to call and back you some on Rush Limbaugh, and anytime I can get a put an anchor on his hiney, and I'd like to sink him 6 fathoms more.
Well, thank you so much for that.
So you just continue your good work. You're doing good. Bob, be proud of you.
Bob's got competition.
Dreamer said Bob had competition.
Well, thank you all very much. I'm just pitch hitting for him tonight, and he was very kind to let me kind of try my hand at it, especially, you know, the night before or the night of such an important State of the Union. See, I become speechless when I have to talk about it, because I think about this man getting up there and telling the American people that he's for them, that he's one of them.
Yeah, he's one of them, all right.
Yeah, and
but we can't say it on the air, can we?
No, we can't. And, you know, I try to be ladylike about it and delicate, but what I'm thinking isn't ladylike and delicate.
No, and me either. I despise him, and he's Cheney and all the rest of them. His whole, I mean, that's a well-known fact, though. I mean, it's right down the line, and all of his cronies that's got charges against him and have just everything they've done is just hurt the American public.
And it's amazing. They, you know, are just, they walk away from it without a slap on the hand.
Yeah, never look back.
No. And, you know, talk about diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, they really need that.
Well, it'd be nice if we could find the diplomats in the bunch, huh?
Yeah, well, with their bodyguards, they'd be in bad shape, probably.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll get off of here and get somebody else a chance and just keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
All right, you're very welcome, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, my love to the family.
All right, thank you.
Well, you know, it is amazing to think about all the corruption and the lies that's went on over the last few years, and we're still tolerating it. You wouldn't tolerate it from anyone else, would you? But this is a man who was supposedly voted into position, and he keeps pulling up these people who have criminal intent. Gonzalez. Oh, sorry, that came out, didn't it? This gentleman knows law, doesn't he? It's a shame that he doesn't practice it. Well, we are going to go on to our next interview, and I'm going to quit jabbering. This is a man I think that you will enjoy. He stands for the American people. Let's just hope the American people continue to stand for him.
A patriot is a person who loves his or her country. Who among you loves your country so much that you have come here today to raise your voice out of deep concern for our nation and our world? And who among you loves your country so much that you insist that our nation's leaders tell us the truth? So let's hear it. Give us the truth. 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 Because if we had had the truth, we wouldn't be here today. Let no one deny that we are patriots. We support our nation's troops. Let's hear it for our nation's troops. And we have so many veterans here today. All the veterans, let's hear it from the veterans. Look at the veterans that are here today. We are grateful to our veterans who have sacrificed so much for our freedom, sacrificed so much so that we could be here today. We love our country. We hold dear the values upon which our nation was founded, and we are distressed at what our president, our administration, and our Congress are doing to and in the name of our nation. So to James Evans and these folks who financed this massive radio campaign these last few days, let them finally understand blind faith in bad leaders is not patriotism. A patriot does not tell people who are intensely concerned about their country to just sit down and be quiet, to refrain from speaking out in the name of politeness or for the sake of being a good host, or to show slavish, blind obedience and deference to a dishonest, warmongering, human rights violating president. That is not a patriot. Rather, that person is a sycophant. That person is a member of a frightening culture of obedience, a culture where falling in line with authority is more important than choosing what is right, even if it is not easy, safe, or popular. And I suspect that person is afraid. Afraid we are right. Afraid of the truth, even to the point of denying it. Afraid he or she has put in with an oppressive, inhumane regime that does not respect the laws and the traditions of our country, and that history will rank as the worst presidency our nation has ever had to endure. In response to those who believe we should blindly support this disastrous president, his administration, and the complacent, complicit Congress, listen to the words of Theodore Roosevelt, a great president, and I might remind everybody, a Republican, who said, "The president is merely the most important among a large number of public servants. He should be supported or opposed exactly to the degree which is warranted by his good conduct or bad conduct. His efficiency or inefficiency in rendering loyal, able, and disinterested service to the nation as a whole. Therefore, it is absolutely necessary that there should be full liberty to tell the truth about his acts. And this means that it is exactly necessary to blame him when he does wrong as to praise him when he does right." And President Theodore Roosevelt continued. He said, any other attitude in an American citizen is both base and servile. To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, listen up, Utah Republicans and James Evans, and no offense to all the good Republicans that are here with us today, but these were the words of President Theodore Roosevelt. To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Nothing. President Roosevelt didn't stop there. He said nothing but the truth should be spoken about him or anyone else, but it is even more important to tell the truth, pleasant or unpleasant, about him than about anybody else. Those were the words of Theodore Roosevelt, a great president, who knew the true meaning of patriotism. So, we are here today as truth tellers. And we are here to demand, give us the truth! Give us the truth! Give us the truth! Give us the truth! And we are here today to insist that those who were elected to be our leaders must tell us the truth. We are here today to insist that our news media live up to its sacred responsibility to ascertain and report the truth. That our news media live up to its responsibility to ascertain and report the truth rather than acting like nothing more than a bulletin board for the lies and propaganda of a manipulative, dishonest federal government. Well, we have been getting just about everything but the truth on matters of life and death, on matters upon which our nation's reputation hinges, on matters that directly relate to our nation's most fundamental values, and on matters relating to the survival of our planet. In the process, our nation has engaged in a tragic, unnecessary war, based upon categorically false justifications. More than 100,000 people have been killed, and many more have been seriously maimed, brain damaged, or rendered mentally ill. Our nation's reputation throughout much of the world has been destroyed. We have many more enemies bent on our destruction than before our invasion of Iraq, and the hatred toward us has grown to the point that it will take many years, perhaps generations, to overcome the loathing created by our unjustified illegal invasion and occupation of a Muslim nation. What incredible ineptitude and callousness for our president to talk about a crusade while lying to us to make a case for the invasion and occupation of a Muslim country.
Our children and later generations will pay the price of the lies, the violence, the cruelty, the incompetence, and the inhumanity of the Bush administration and the lackey Congress that has so cowardly abrogated its responsibility and authority under our checks and balances system of government. We are here to say we will not stand for it anymore. No more lies, no more preemptive illegal war based on false information, no more God is on our side religious nonsense to justify this immoral, illegal war. And we are here to say, most fundamentally, no more humanity in the name of our nation. So let's raise our voices and demand, give us the truth to this administration, to our news media. Give us the truth. Give us the truth. Give us the truth. Give us the truth. Now, let's consider some of the most monstrous lies, lies that have led us like a nation of sheep to this tragic war. Following September 11, 2001, the world knew that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were responsible for the horrific attacks on our country. Our longtime allies were sympathetic and supportive, but our president transformed that support into international disdain for the United States, choosing to illegally invade and occupy Iraq rather than focus on and capture the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks on our country. Why invade and occupy Iraq when it was bin Laden and Al-Qaeda who attacked our country and who still have never been brought to justice? Well, Vice President Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice represented to us without any qualification that there were strong ties between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. In September 2002, President Bush made the incredible and absolutely false claim that you cannot distinguish between Al-Qaeda and Saddam. President Bush represented to Congress without any factual basis whatsoever that Iraq planned, authorized, committed, or aided the 9/11 attacks. Our president and vice president, along with an unquestioning news media, repeatedly led our nation to believe that there was a working relationship between Al-Qaeda and the Iraqi government, a relationship that threatened the United States. Even last week, when I met with Thomas Bach, the national commander of the American Legion, I asked him, why are we engaged in the war in Iraq? Why did we invade and occupy Iraq? He said, why, of course, because of the 9/11 attacks on our country. I asked, what did Iraq have to do with those attacks? He looked puzzled and said, well, the connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. I was shocked. I was stunned. Here is a man who has criticized us for opposing the war in Iraq, and he is so completely wrong about the underlying facts to justify this war. Not only has there never been any evidence of any involvement by Saddam or Iraq with the attacks on 9/11, but there has never been any evidence of any operational connection whatsoever between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. And Colin Powell finally conceded that there is, and these are his words, no concrete evidence about the connection. The chairman of the monitoring group appointed by the United Nations Security Council to track Al-Qaeda disclosed that his team had found no evidence linking Al-Qaeda to Saddam Hussein, and the top investigator for our European allies had said, if there were any such links, we would have found them. But we have found no serious connections whatsoever. President Bush, by the way, finally admitted 9 days ago, on August 21st, during a press conference, that there was no connection between the attacks on 9/11 and Iraq. Isn't it terrific that the President of the United States has now admitted what others have known for so long? But where is the accountability for the tragic war we were led into on the basis of his earlier misrepresentation? Beside the fictions of Saddam Hussein somehow being linked to 9/11 attacks and his supposed connections with Al-Qaeda, what was the principal justification for foregoing additional weapons inspections, working with our longtime allies, refraining from seeking additional resolutions from the United Nations consistently with international law, and hurrying to war, an unprecedented so-called preemptive war in which we would attack and occupy a Muslim nation that posed no security risk to the United States and caused the deaths of so many thousands of innocent men, women, and children, and the deaths and lifetime injuries to so many thousands of our own servicemen and servicewomen. Well, the principal claim was that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical weapons, and was seeking to build up a nuclear weapons capability. As we now know, there was nothing, no evidence whatsoever to support those false claims. President Bush represented to us and to people around the world that one of the reasons we needed to make war in Iraq and to do it right away was because Saddam Hussein was seeking to build nuclear weapons. His assertions about Saddam Hussein trying to purchase nuclear materials from an African nation and about Iraq seeking to obtain aluminum tubes for the enrichment of uranium were challenged at the time by our own intelligence agency and by our own scientists, yet President Bush failed to tell us that. 10 days before the invasion of Iraq, it was proven that the documents upon which President Bush's claim about Saddam Hussein trying to obtain uranium was based were forgeries. That was found 10 days before we invaded Iraq. However, President Bush did not disclose that fact to the American people, and by that failure, he betrayed each and every one of us. He betrayed our country, and he betrayed the cause of world peace. Neither did the vast majority of the news media in this country disclose those forgeries until it was far too late. It took our local newspapers here in Salt Lake City 4 months until after the war was commenced and after President Bush declared that major combat in Iraq was over to report the discovery that those documents were forgeries and therefore that there was no basis for the false claims about Saddam Hussein trying to build up a nuclear capability. By its failure to promptly disclose those forgeries, our news media betrayed us as well. Had the American people known we were being lied to? Had President Bush informed us that the documents were forged and that he had no other basis for his claim? Had our nation's media done its job rather than slavishly repeating to us the lies being fed to it by the Bush administration, our nation very well may not have allowed the commencement of this outrageous, tragic, illegal, unjustified war. Then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice said that high-strength aluminum tubes acquired by Iraq were only really suited for nuclear weapons programs, warning, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. Undisclosed by President Bush or Condoleezza Rice was the fact that top nuclear scientists had informed the administration that those tubes were too narrow, too heavy, too long to be useful in developing nuclear weapons and could be used for other purposes. Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency agreed. So much for the phony claims of Saddam Hussein building nuclear weapons, which were the primary claims justifying the rush to war without working with the United Nations, without working with our longtime allies, without giving the weapons inspectors an opportunity to do their job, which if they'd had that opportunity, they would have disclosed what we know now, and that is there were no weapons of mass destruction. What were we told about chemical and biological weapons of mass destruction? These claims were as baseless and fraudulent as the claims about nuclear weapons. President Bush told us in his January 2003 State of the Union address that Hussein had the materials to produce as much as 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and VX nerve agent. Then in May of 2003, he made the outlandish statement, and it turns out to have been totally false. He told our nation, we found the weapons of mass destruction. We found biological laboratories. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, this is the Secretary of Defense, by the way, who assured our nation that when we went to war, this war would take maybe 6 days, maybe 6 weeks, but he doubted as long as 6 months. He told us at that time, we know where the weapons of mass destruction are. Vice President Cheney and then Secretary of State Powell also joined in the chorus of lies and misinformation about those weapons of mass destruction. Of course, no stockpiles of biological or chemical weapons were found. Bush administration inspector David Kaye, appointed by the Bush administration, noted that Iraq did not have ongoing chemical weapons programs after 1991, a conclusion which was remarkably similar to statements made by Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice just months before the 9/11 attacks and before they sacrificed the truth in the service of promoting the Bush administration's case for war against Iraq. On February 24, 2001, less than 7 months before 9/11, Colin Powell said that Saddam Hussein, and these were his words, has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors, said Colin Powell some 7 months before 9/11. And in July 2001, 2 months before 9/11, Condoleezza Rice said, these were her words, we are able to keep his arms from him. His military forces have not been rebuilt, she told us 2 months before September 11th. It is astounding how they changed their claims after the president decided to make a case for the invasion and occupation of Iraq. To think that we could be lied to by so many members of the Bush administration with such impunity is frightening, chilling. Yet these imperious, arrogant, dishonest people think we should continue to just fall in line with them and take them at their word after we have been lied to time after time after time by these same people. The truth has been established. This is not a matter of opinion. This is not a matter of belief. It is the established truth. Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks on the United States. There has been no evidence of any operational ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. What a tragedy. leading to greater tragedy. We are fed lie after lie. Our media reinforces those lies, and we are a nation that has been led to a tragic, illegal, unprovoked war. So, we are here today because of our values. We love our country. We cherish the freedoms and liberties of our country. And we don't call those who speak out against our nation's leaders unpatriotic or un-American or appeasers of fascists, as we heard from our incompetent Secretary of Defense yesterday. We have good, wholesome family values. In our families, we teach honesty. In our families, we teach kindness and compassion toward others. And in our families, we teach that violence, if ever justified, must be an absolutely last resort. In our families, we teach that our nation's constitutional values are to be upheld and that they are worth standing up as we are here today and fighting for. Our family values promote respect and equal rights toward everyone, regardless of race, regardless of ethnic origin, and regardless of sexual orientation. In our families, we teach the value of hard work and competence. And we are left to wonder about a president who, after receiving an intelligence memo about the threat posed by Al-Qaeda, decided to continue his month-long vacation just before the 9/11 attacks on our country. As we demand the truth from others, let us also face the truth. Our government all too often has not cared at all about the human rights of people in other nations, and it doesn't really care about democracy unless it leads to the election of those who will do our bidding. Consider the irony regarding the claims that Saddam had chemical weapons, and because of that, we needed to rush to war against Iraq. When Saddam Hussein was using chemical weapons, first against the Iranians and then against his own people, the Kurds, our country provided him with biological and chemical agents and equipment to make those weapons. Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush refused even to support economic sanctions, let alone going to war against him. Economic sanctions against Hussein for his use of weapons of mass destruction. What did our nation do in response to Hussein's use of chemical weapons, killing tens of thousands of people when he actually had them, and we knew that he had them? Our response was that we befriended, coddled, and rewarded him with government-guaranteed loans totaling $5 billion since 1983, freeing up currency for Hussein to modernize his military assets. Perhaps those in the United States government who aided and abetted Saddam Hussein to further U.S. business interests while he was gassing the Kurds should be sharing his courtroom dock as he is now being tried for crimes against humanity. No more lies. No more hiding of the truth. We can stand the truth. No more wars that more than triple the value of stock in Dick Cheney's prior employer, Halliburton, and which, as of last September, has increased the value of the Halliburton CEO stock, one person, their CEO, by $78 million. We are patriots. We are deeply concerned, and we demand change now. So I want to hear from you. No more. No more lies from Condoleezza Rice about whether she and President Bush were advised before 9/11 of the possibility of planes being flown into buildings by terrorists. No more. No more gross incompetence in the office of the Secretary of Defense. No more torture of human beings. No more disregard of the basic human rights enshrined in the Geneva Convention. No more kidnapping of people and sending them off to secret prisons in nations where they will be tortured. No more unconstitutional wiretapping of Americans. No more proposed amendments to the United States Constitution that would, for the first time in our nation's history, limit fundamental rights and liberties for entire classes of people simply on the basis of sexual orientation. No more federal land giveaways to developers. No more increases in mercury emissions from old, dirty, dangerous coal-burning power plants. No more backroom deals that deprive protection for millions of acres of wild lands in our nation. No more attacks on immigrants who work so hard to build better lives in this nation. No more inaction by Congress on fixing our hypocritical and inconsistent immigration laws and practices. No more reliance on fiction rather than the science of global warming. No more manipulation of our media with false propaganda. No more disastrous cuts in funding for those most in need. No more federal cuts in community policing and local law enforcement grant programs for our cities. No more inaction on stopping the tragic genocide in the Darfur region of Sudan. No more of the Patriot Act. No more killing. No more supposedly preemptive wars. No more contempt for our longtime allies around the world. No more dependence on foreign oil. No more failure to impose increased fuel efficiency standards for automobiles manufactured in this country. No more energy policies developed in secret meetings between Dick Cheney and his energy company cronies. No more excuses for failing to aggressively cut global warming pollutant emissions. No more tragically incompetent federal responses to natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina. No more tax cuts for the wealthiest while the middle class and those who are economically disadvantaged continue to struggle more and more each year. No more reckless spending and massive tax cuts resulting in historic deficits and historic accumulated national debt. No more purchasing of elections by the wealthiest corporations and individuals in our country. No more phony, ineffective, inhumane, so-called war on drugs. No more failure to pass an increase in the minimum wage. And no more silence by the American people.
That's right, folks. You heard it, no more. No more silence by the American people. Didn't that warm your heart? Did you hear the people cheering in the background? They're cheering for you. They're cheering for those who want to make a difference. I want to make a difference. I want a better future for my children. For your children. I want a better world. Now, some people may snicker at that. That's because they don't really live. They exist. They think their world's okay. They don't look out their door. They don't care about their neighbors because they're too caught up in that little box. They don't look outside of it. But I can assure you this. What affects your neighbor affects you. It may not right at the moment, but it will. And I think that's been proven down through history. There have been civilizations that have been great that's been lost. And the sad thing of it is we're on that path. The people who do speak out for us are the ones that are ignored. They're not supported. They're not encouraged. Yeah, they get the, gee, we love you. This is great. That's not support. What that is that's just patting them on the back and turning around thinking that you've done what you needed to do and you go away. You have to stand with them. I'm willing to do that. I do it. I do it every day. My family does it. Talk about family values. I know what family values are. I know you do too. When you worry about your children, about their health, about their welfare, when you worry about others, you're doing your part. It doesn't always take money. Sometimes it just takes a shoulder. When you show somebody you care. Rocky Anderson cares about the everyday American. He's not a corporate millionaire. He's just a guy. Those are the people who make our nation strong. It's just the normal, everyday folks. And that's what we all are. I don't think we have any millionaires out here listening. If we do, they're not really interested. They've got far more better things to do than to worry about the problems of society in general, unless it affects their welfare. Our president is one of those people who've never had to worry about anything. A guy who sits in a multi-million dollar seat does not worry about you. I don't care what they say. I'm one of those people that I believe in action, not words. When I see something taking place, then I know it's true. People can tell you anything. They can promise you the sun, moon, and stars, but that doesn't mean they're going to come through for you. So what do you want for the future? Do you want a guy up there telling you that your sons or your daughters or your grandchildren or even you are going to be sent to foreign soils to help with their coffers? You know, Mark Levine had on a gentleman the other day by the name of John Cox that will be running for president in 2008. And if you go back to the archives and you listen to what this man has to say, oil came up quite frequently. He tells you how he started out, you know, on the bottom rung. He was one of those poor people. I didn't hear anything from John Cox that gave me one iota of an idea that he was poor. He talked about his wife's medication. Well, let me tell you something. When it comes down to the metal meeting, the stone, then that man doesn't know what it means to do without. His wife doesn't know what to do without. Arthritis? That's bad. Cancer's bad. Life-threatening illnesses are bad, and the majority of Americans do not have any health coverage. In order to be a productive society, you've got to be healthy. So, why aren't we? Why do we keep putting these people in place that doesn't care one whit about what happens to us. It's like watching a soap opera. Now, I'm not a big fan of the soap operas. I don't watch TV that much. But boy, my mom and grandma did. And you know, they became so ensconced in these people's lives that at times they would freak me out by saying something about them. This is not a soap opera, folks. This is reality. I noticed on the Discovery channel last night that they have the military channel. You want to talk about perverse and sick. Yeah, it's a great thing to see what's going on. It's not a great thing to see it being promoted as, you know, gee, go join, be a redneck, go do this. That's kind of the way it came across. It wasn't, these men and women are serving their country. They're doing what we need to have done. They're the ones that stand and protect. And right now, their lives are being put in jeopardy. For what? Iraqis didn't bomb America. They didn't do 9/11. That was the Saudis. President, he admitted it. But everybody seems to keep going back to the idea that the Iraqis did it. I'm not sure why. Maybe that's what makes them feel better. Maybe that's what lets them sleep at night. You know, I'm sure that I'm going to get a really hard time for what I'm saying. I really don't care. That's the way I feel. I hope tonight got you primed for the president's speech. I hope that it helps some, because there are people out there representing you. The Carpenters and Millwrights represent you. Free speech is free. And they build the American dream every day by their support of the horn, by the support of the men and women that they work for. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, because you are a part of our family. You're a part of our lives. I'd like to thank Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. They keep us up to date. They provide us with information on things that maybe we would have missed, but they think that it's important to you. Peter Godbold. Man, that guy is awesome. He is a tech god. He makes the computers do things I could never imagine. John Fox. He's our engineer, and he does it from Australia. He's a wonderful man, and he does one great show. To all the Horn hosts, thank you. To everyone, I hope you have a sound and safe sleep tonight. I hope the world's a better place tomorrow. And I hope that this president doesn't get to stay in 2008 and that we go forward to something much better than what we have now. And to RMR. It's all for you.
Just Listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Bush ready State of the Union speech. Bush poll ratings before the speech fall to Nixon's levels. Millions could see taxes up in a Bush health plan. Democrats frame State of the Union response. Republican opposition to Iraq plan grows. McCain bashes Cheney over Iraq policy. Cheney and media to take stand in Libby perjury case. View of U.S.'s global role? Worse. Iran guards start war game to test missiles. Chavez to U.S. officials, go to hell. For the Clinton candidacy,